Dear listeners, Sai Ram, welcome to a special conversation on Splendor of the Sai Pancharatna Kritis. Today, Radio Sai presents the second episode of this dialogue conducted by Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. Our guest today is Professor G. Venkatraman. Please enjoy this special conversation that was recorded in May 2016.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, thank you for joining us for the second episode of this special series on the Sai Pancharatna Kritis. In the first episode, my guest, Professor G. Venkatraman, took us back in time to discuss the gift of linguistic communication that human beings enjoy, the origin of music, both vocal and instrumental, and its role in the adoration of God from the Vedic times. He also brought to life examples from various musical traditions to help us understand the place of music in attaining proximity to God and for enjoying the heightened state of consciousness commonly described as bliss. Today, we hope to take this dialogue further and learn more about the swaras, or the notes of Indian music, their spiritual significance, the origin of ragas, and much more, till we touch upon the life and legacy of Saint Tyagaraja. And next week, in the final episode, we will have Professor Venkatraman and my colleague, Mr. C.G. Sai Prakash, walk us through the birth of the Sai Pancharatna Kritis. So without any further delay, I welcome Professor G. Venkatraman to the show. Sai Ram, sir.
Sai Ram, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, let us begin today's discussion by talking about this stairway of swaras, or the notes, Sa Re Ga Ma Pa Da Ni Sa. Last week, you spoke to us about this particular stairway, and what I would like to learn this morning on behalf of all our listeners is, if there is any scope for flexibility or elasticity, so to speak, within the framework of these notes.
Thank God there is flexibility, otherwise we'll have only one raga.
Yes, that's what I thought.
So the flexibility has been very cleverly and ingeniously built in over a period of time. There are three rules. Mm-hmm. The first rule is that if you take Sa Re Ga Ma Pa Da Ni, Sa and Pa, they have no flexibility.
So they stay as they are.
They are what you call firm as the rock of Gibraltar. They cannot change. And there is a good reason why. Mm-hmm. The beginning and the middle have to be firm. Between Sa and Pa, Re, Ga, Ma are there.
Yes.
And beyond Pa, Da and Ni are there. So having fixed Sa and Pa, they next took up Ma. Mm-hmm. They said there can be two kinds of Ma.
I see.
Suddha Madhyamam and Prati Madhyamam. Ma 1 and Ma 2. Two moms. Okay. So you have got some flexibility.
Yes, sir.
You can go up the staircase via Mom 1 or Ma 2. Mm-hmm. There is flexibility. Then we go with regard to Re, Ga, which are below Ma, they allowed three variations for each.
I see.
So now you are getting a lot of variations. And as if that is not enough, beyond Pa, you have Da and Ni. So they allowed three variations for that.
That also, I see.
And they said, now as you go up, you can choose one of each. So you will get seven. But you can choose them in many ways. And straight away, you get quite a variety. Now this is a problem in what is called combinatorial algebra. Permutations and combinations, one of the subjects I learned, and I used to like it because the problems are very challenging. And if you work out what are the different ways in which you can go up, stepping on each swara only once, you get 72.
Possibilities.
72. These are all called Janya Ragas, the ragas that give birth to babies.
Okay.
They are the
Mother Ragas.
Mother Ragas. Uh-huh. And there are 72, and this have been codified by musicologists, and charts have been made and all that sort of thing. One of the first to do so was a man called Venkatamakki. Mm-hmm. But actually his name is Venkatramana. But
hey, your name's here.
Please don't insult him. And he was a musicologist, as distinguished from a musician. That is, he worked out the techniques of music, the grammar of music, shall I say. And those are the Janya Ragas, and the songs have been sung in all the Janya Ragas. There is one more rule. If you go up via seven steps, you must come back via seven steps, same seven steps. That is the characteristic of a Janya Raga.
I see.
You can actually come down by another staircase of seven. Then automatically you've got a baby raga. You go up one way, you come down one way. So such compound ragas have names of two ragas, Vasanta Bhairavi, for example. So from there, people have invented all kinds of ragas because there is one more flexibility. What is the sanctity about having seven? Why not just five? If you take five, the raga Mohanam, Sariga Padasa, just five. And there are beautiful songs that, for example, Tyagaraja sang a song, Mohana Rama, playing on the word Mohana. And then we have the standard Vinayaka song in Hamsadhan, Vatapi Ganapati. That is also a song, raga based on five notes, Sariga Panisa instead of Da. So, with just five, you can have rich capital, provided your skill. So, people have been inventing ragas and so on and so forth.
What would be the English equivalent of raga? Tune?
Maybe I would call
it a meter.
No, it's not a tune.
Tune.
And it's a tune composed of a specific set of notes with an ascending scale and a descending scale. There is a grammar.
Yes.
There is no flexibility. Flexibility is in sort of adding a vibration and so on and
little variation.
Variations and all that.
And all ragas melodious?
Actually, that's a good question, because if you take the mathematical combination and you make create a raga out of it just by combinatorials, it may not sound nice to the ear. And most of the good ragas have already been discovered. But you may, if you look hard enough, find a diamond here and there. That depends on your luck. But it's like going to a gold mine that has been cleaned out.
I see. Now, there are certain legends who are associated with the evolution of Indian music, especially Carnatic music, and three names are prominent. So could you share some knowledge or insights about the Trinity, that, so to speak?
You didn't explain what Trinity is, but I know what it is and I'll explain it to the listeners. But the Trinity had a father, so to say, a musicologist kind of father. And he was the source, Gangotri, and that was Purandara Dasa. His life is a very interesting story, and I have no time to go into it here. But he, due to certain circumstances in his life, became transformed from an utter miser to an ardent devotee of Krishna, whom he worshipped as Purandara Vittala. So all his songs carried what you call a signature, Purandara Vittala. Those words will occur. Some of the musicians had a way of signing in their name. Tyagaraja did.
Yes.
For example,
Meera Bhajans too.
But there are Shama Shastri did it. I don't think Diksha, Guruha, he also did it. They leave a trail of
like an artist signs his work.
Yes, exactly. And it was Purandara Dasa who sort of laid down the basic rules of learning music and singing music, starting with how a beginner should learn, what are the swaras they should learn, what are the drills they should go through. And also, he chose Maya Malagala as an introductory raga, easy to sort of pick up without any difficulty. And he gave some songs in all in that particular raga. That tradition is followed to this day. Anybody who learns Carnatic music from what you call a properly trained guru will go through all those things. So he was the tradition setter, and he lived in the 14th century or thereabouts. He was, in a sense, the originator of Carnatic music. But the technology of music increased from his time, and the composing abilities also flowered. And there was actually the golden age 17 something to 18 something, during which period the Trinity appeared.
Uh-huh.
And the oldest of them was Shyama Shastri. And then there was Tyagaraja, then there was Muthuswami Dikshadhar. Between them, I do not know who was oldest. They were all sort of contemporaries, and they all lived very near to each other. And they were all born in Tanjavur. Shyama Shastri was the first in the Trinity, actually worked as a priest in a temple. He was a priest. He also was a musician who composed many songs in adoration of the deity there, that is Bangara Kamakshi. There is a story that this Bangara Kamakshi idol was actually in a temple in Kanchipuram.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a threat of attack by a neighboring Muslim king. And, they vandalized idols. So to protect these idols, it was secretly brought and installed in Tanjavur, which was supposed to be quite far away from the Muslim invaders. And there in that temple, Shyama Shastri, by hereditary, became a priest.
Mm-hmm.
And he also composed songs. He didn't compose many. He didn't have many students. His son was his student, Subraya Shastri. But he learned from all. He was the only person who learned from all three
of them.
All three of them.
And those are the only collection that we have from him.
Yeah, whatever he could get from his father.
Yes.
But they are extraordinarily beautiful. They have their own uniqueness. And if Shyama Shastri worshipped Bangara Kamakshi, Tyagaraja worshipped Rama. Whereas Dikshadhar was highly God-friendly. He worshipped all gods without any inhibition. Although he started with Subramanya. His first song was composed in Tiruthani when he was worshipping in the temple. Usually his songs are sort of composed after a visit to a temple.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to a temple, he adores the deity, comes back and sings in praise of the deity.
Mm.
Apparently, by the way, Tyagaraja got his name because he was born in Tanjavur. And there is a Shiva temple where Shiva is known as Tyagaraja, king of sacrifice. Because he swallowed the poison and held it in order to save the Devas and Asuras, both of them. So he is the supreme sacrificer. So he was named Tyagaraja. Actually, he was named Tyaga Brahmam. The family used to have the suffix Brahmam. His father was Rama Brahmam. He was Tyaga Brahmam. But his father was given a piece of land in Tiruvayar by the king. So they built an ancestral house and Tyagaraja lived in that house and gave up his body in the end. So once it seems he challenged Dikshadhar, "You sing so many songs, you have not sung a song on my Rama."
I see.
And he composed a song, Mamava Pattabhirama. That is, he describes Rama's Pattabhishekam.
His coronation.
Coronation. After returning to Ayodhya, after defeating Ravana and all that, exterminating Ravana. And it's very beautiful. And actually, Swami sang it in Venkatagiri.
Oh.
Two songs he sang. One of Tyagaraja's Pancharatnas and Mamava Pattabhirama.
Okay, perhaps we can play a small clip of that song for our listeners at this point in time.
Just to remind you, that was Swami singing in Kacheri or concert style in Venkatagiri somewhere in the early 50s. The song from which we heard an excerpt was composed by Muthuswami Dikshadhar in the raga Manirangu and is in praise of Lord Rama seated at his coronation. Swami has given entire concerts in Venkatagiri and I hope and pray that those recordings can be retrieved. I might add that we are actually working at it.
Yes. So that became the golden age of Carnatic music. Absolutely. With the three doyens of Carnatic music living as contemporaries and complementing each other's talent and creativity.
We should not forget they were all great bhaktas of the Lord.
Yes. That was the main thing. They were great devotees. They were
absolute
not only musically
devotees.
Talented, but also...
Actually, Dikshitar was a Devi Upasagar. That means he was doing Devi Puja. They do very rigorous Devi Puja. Parvati. Devi Upasagar, that's what he's called. But as a musician, he worshipped
all forms. Wow. I see. So there is a contrast here. In comparison to the West, there was primacy given to vocal music in the Carnatic tradition.
It was spontaneous, you know. It came out of the desire of bhaktas to express their love for God, and they found music was a readily available vehicle. Mm-hmm. God has given a throat and a tongue and a nabhi.
Yeah.
So why not sing for God?
So it was not just instrumental. There was a whole lot of vocal music.
So in fact, by the way, Dikshitar used to play veena. And there is a legend that when he went to Kashi, he went to Kashi and stayed there for 7 or 8 years. And Devi appeared and gave him a veena, small veena, and it is still kept in his house.
Oh.
When I went to Benares, I was shown a temple where Devi gave him darshan and gave him the veena.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a vainika.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Thyagaraja did not have any instruments. He just had his tambura and he had that, what you call, chipla thing.
Yeah.
With the hand you keep the beat.
Mm-hmm.
All Harikatha people have it.
Yeah, just to keep beat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So clearly literature played some great role in Carnatic music and its development.
I will put it this way. Lyrics played a very great role
mm-hmm.
in Carnatic music.
Yes.
Lyrics were very important. Absolutely important.
And they've survived thousands of years, at least hundreds of years now. And they still touch the heart and move people to devotion.
That is if you have a feeling of bhakti, not otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have the feeling of bhakti, it does. Just let me give you an example how I felt on one occasion. Swami was going to Kodai and he had to make a stop before we climbed the hill. Some devotee had arranged a reception and all that
mm-hmm.
in sort of exotic style. And the Nadasura Vidwan, they have that in temples.
Mm-hmm.
They play welcome music. And as Swami's car was going, and we were following in a car behind, he was playing a song, Rarama Inti Daka.
Mm-hmm.
O Rama, come to my house.
So
and there is a historical context to that, which if you permit me, I would like to narrate.
Please
because
do.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thyagaraja's brother was quite an elder brother, was quite disappointed that Thyagaraja was not going and singing in concerts and making money. And Thyagaraja actually received an invitation from the king, come and sing in the palace. He says, you idiot, go there and sing. You will get a lot of sanmanam and all that. He refuses. And he says, I won't sing for money, I'll sing only for Rama. And in a fit of anger, his brother later on takes all the idols and throws it into Kaveri. So he is distraught, completely shattered. And when he goes for bathing, his feet touch something. And then he is able to discover the idols. And he bursts into a song, I found it. Kanukuntine and all that. Then he brings Rama to the house. On that occasion, he sings this song.
Hmm. How appropriate.
So, I don't think...
They realized.
Maybe somebody realized it, but I was deeply touched. So, how appropriate it is. So, the enjoyment of the music also depends on knowing the context. That becomes very important. There's lyrics, the context, and the music come together. That is one thing which you do not have in instrumental music. Instrumental takes you to a different wavelength. I won't rubbish it or trash it, mm-hmm. not at all.
It has its own sublimity.
No, I mean Vivaldi's Four Seasons is enough for me,
mm-hmm.
just to show that. But when you go to bhakti, bhakti finds expression. And that is very, what I will call, important for our tradition.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true. Now, this discussion, one name that keeps coming up in both the episodes is that of Saint Thyagaraja. And I think a little bit about his life would be something nice to know. before we proceed with the Tyagaraja festival and how after his death the whole tradition began.
Okay. Tyagaraja was born somewhere mid-1700s in Tanjavur.
Yes.
And then he moved to Thiruvayur. And as a small boy, somebody came and told him, you chant the name of Rama. And he did it for 9 crore times, 90 million.
Wow.
That's not an easy thing. And the legend goes that when he finished it, he got a vision of sage Vishwamitra taking young Rama and Lakshmana to the forest. And he burst out into song in the middle of a song. It is the middle of a song. And the way the song is sung is you start from the middle and then come to the end and then complete it.
Oh, I see.
So he sort of literally burst out. And then Rama became his Ishtadevata because Rama was the ideal man. So literally he began to live with Rama. He will wake up Rama in the evening and then he will do puja for him. Then he will put him to sleep and all that. And there is a little story told by late Sangeeta Kalanidhi S. Ramanathan. He went to America once. His daughter was living there and he gave a lecture, demonstration talk. And he sang the song which Tyagaraja used to sing to wake up Rama. He says, and he compares it to the way Vishwamitra used to wake up Rama and Lakshmana.
Mm-hmm.
That is the standard Suprabhadam. Kausalya Supraja Rama. So Vishwamitra will say with in a loud voice, come on, get up fellows, what the hell? Rolling in bed and all that. And when this man sang Tyagaraja's song, he said, it is so sweet, I'll pull up the sheet and go to sleep.
Sleep again.
So he said, please Rama, you have to get up now, it's time for you to get up. and so on. So there was some sort of a unique resonance between him and Rama. He literally lived with Rama. He will complain to Rama. He will beg to Rama. He will get angry with Rama. And then he will praise Rama. And then he will say, please give me a job, Rama. And so on. It was inexplicable.
Just talking to Rama like a living presence in his life all the time.
He was Rama mad.
Totally intoxicated.
Intoxicated. And he did not care for anything. He did not care for fame and all that. But luckily, he was able to attract some students.
Yes.
And because of them, the tradition survived. He was quite a prolific composer.
Yes.
And apart from that, he has composed dance dramas, two of them, including one in Sanskrit. I think it's called Prahlada Charitra or something like that.
It has to do with the devotee, child devotee Prahlada.
Yeah, Prahlada.
Now, upon his passing on, I understand that his disciples, who were very distraught, they gave him a nice send-off and they buried him near, close to the river side. And then they went their ways and they started observing his anniversary of his passing on in their respective places. Till one time, one of his close disciples came back to offer it straight at his samadhi when he discovered to his horror that the samadhi could hardly be found. There was all weeds and bushes growing around and it had been very unkept. He almost couldn't find it. That is when I think they realized that something was seriously wrong here and there was a revival of sorts. All his devotees were distraught that their master was lying in a state of neglect there, his burial place. So what can you share about that moment?
Well, that is an interesting question you posed. You know, devotees adore their master. Human master or the divine master. But in that process, they also become jealous of each other. And we have the great example of Satyabhama being jealous of Rukmani, although Rukmani didn't have any such feelings. So it goes back to the scriptures. Now in this case, it was the students, Shishyas. So when there was a difference of opinion, words were exchanged and they became two groups. And there was a settlement. On Aradhana day, they fixed a certain time. Before that time, one party will do. After that, another party. Yeah. I don't know whether they did it by toss or by some sort of...
No, it seemed the elder one did it first and the younger
they
one...
They will remove all the decoration, do it afresh and do it.
But first they cleared up the burial area and made a samadhi.
Oh yeah, they sort of... Over a period of time, they built a small samadhi and which grew and grew and went on till 1926 or a little more than that.
And then they started on the tithi, on the day of his... I believe he passed away on the Pushya Bahula Panchami,
yeah.
Which is the fifth day of the waning moon in the Hindu calendar, and in this year 2016,
Pushya Masa,
and this year in 2016, it fell on January 28th this year. So it always comes towards end of January almost.
That's right.
Yeah. So after they cleaned up the area and built him a temple, then the fight began. The politics came in that there were two groups and they decided.
See, actually, it was a modest memorial. That memorial grew over a period of years.
I see.
But there was no spot where a few people could sit and sing close to the burial spot.
I see. Now, these two groups that came, I understand they did it, the first one began, I think, 5 days before the Samadhi and went on till the day, and then the next group came and continued for five. The people who benefited the most were the people of the town because they got to listen to good music and they got nice Mahaprasadam every day.
You see, what happened was that before that itself, there was a financial problem. These people wanted to build something. They didn't have money. And there was this lady, Bangalore Nagaratnammal, who has a long story herself.
Yeah.
And she
was a professional singer.
She was a professional singer. She learned Tyagaraja songs and she became quite attached to them. And she came and said, I've got money, I will help. They wanted the money but not her. Because she came from for two reasons why they didn't want her. First, because she was a woman. They didn't allow women there. And secondly, she came from what is called the Devadasi clan. That's an ethnic group which was looked down upon. So they tried to take her money but not give her a place.
She was not giving in.
She was quite tough.
Good for her.
But she was at the same time willing to make some sort of compromises. And it was her money that allowed them to build it up to a certain level. So they had a samadhi, a temple, and a place where they could sing.
A hall, like a mandap.
Something like a small mandap. Mm-hmm. But then there was no what you call agreed program. People would just come, they were singing, it was going on like that. And it happened till 1940. In the year 1941 or 42, Quit India Movement, there was a man called S.Y. Krishnaswamy. He belonged to the ICS. In fact, he used to write for the Hindu, Know Your Tyagaraja, as late as the 80s. I've got two books of his. He used to sign just S.Y.K., Suchindram Yagyanarayana Krishnaswamy, that's his full name.
Wow.
He belonged to the old ICS.
Yes.
And he must have been a relatively young man at 1940, see, he must be 35 or so. He was a very keen music fan. And he said, what is this point, people coming and just singing concerts and go away? There must be some sort of systematic adoration. And he called a great singer called Harikesan Allur, Muthiah Bhagavatar, who has served in the court of King of Trivandrum and the Mysore court. In fact, while in Mysore, he set many of the compositions of Udayar, who was the king at that time. He used to compose on Chamundeshwari, the god Amba who goes on the line. And he set all that to music, Harikesan Allur Muthiah Bhagavatar. So he was a very good musicologist. And a composer also, he knew music. He said, can you pick five songs of Tyagaraja, which have dignity and gravitas, etc., etc., which all will sing together? So there is something like a unified adoration.
And structured.
Structured. Instead of, you know, people coming
randomly.
In it's just a sort of a circus where people come and perform and go. Let there be some sort of centrality to this thing. Then it looked like real adoration. So this man's job was to sing, select five songs. And he selected five. The first one in Sanskrit and all the others in Telugu. The last one was Entaro Mahanubhavudu, and which is quite popular. And that tradition goes back to, say, 1943 at the most. So we are sort of 57 plus 16, that many years into that tradition.
Exactly. So the five songs that they picked, what can you tell us about them? First one is in Sanskrit.
Sanskrit. It is in the Raga Nata. It begins Jagadananda Karaka. Then the next one is in Gaula Duddu Galaka. It's a short song, but I like it very much. Third is in Arabi, Sadinchine. That is what Swami sang in Venkatagiri. He didn't sing the Swaras, but just the Sahityam. Fourth is in Varali, Kanakana Ruchi. And fifth is in Sri Ragam, Enthiro Mahanubhavulu, which Swami liked and he used to get it sung. That meaning of the first line is very interesting. Tyagaraja says, there are so many great people, who am I? I bow to all of them.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Sir, in light of this great tradition where Rama is venerated in the Tyagaraja festival through these five hand-picked songs, now that he came back to us as Sri Satya Sai Rama, that is where the question becomes, is there a tradition coming up that would venerate him and his glory through the medium of another five Pancharatna Kritis?
This is an interesting question. And it sort of comes very close to many of my activities. You see, Swami says, for everything, the samayam and sandarpam must be appropriate.
Time and circumstance.
Yes. In the very early days of Swami, he used to compose songs on God.
Right.
And then he would give to people. And if I'm not mistaken, the Kuppam sisters used to sing them. And then there was one kavi who composed a lot of songs on Swami. He even made a book, offered it to Swami. It's floating around somewhere. But after the 50s, Swami started becoming mission-oriented. He was busy, he was running around and so on and so forth. And the occasion for this serious musical adoration did not present itself so much. It got mixed up with some festival or the other. And somehow, though music formed a part of Swami's early life, it sort of seemed to drift away.
Except for the song he would sing at the end of his divine discourse.
No, just that is bhajan.
A regular bhajan. Yeah.
Now and then, artists would come and sing. They would all sing Tyagaraja songs. This has been going on for a very long time. In those days, there were two people, Mamalam, Rama and Lakshmana.
Yes.
They were close to him and all that. And so many musicians would come, they would play Tyagaraja songs and go away. Musicians came and performed, vocal musicians and so on and so forth. It sort of started picking up towards the end. We used to have a lot of kacharis. Malladi brothers would come often, for example, and so on. But the Carnatic tradition, in the sense of adoration of Swami, did not get established. What was happening was the students were composing their own songs and they were singing. But after Swami brought the curtain down on his avatar, the question did arise whether we should have a tradition. If Tyagaraja could have a tradition, what about his boss?
Rama himself.
Yes, so to say. The first sort of trial balloon was attempted in Swami's 85th birthday, on the occasion of his 85th birthday.
In his immediate presence, it was
in
so
his immediate
beautiful,
presence.
My God.
I am here referring to the program which was the last program in the 85th birthday celebration series called Prema Pravaham. The idea for this has been with some of us for some time. And we started working on it seriously in April of that year, 2010. Actually, we were in Delhi. Myself and Sai Prakash began to discuss this. I remember that occasion very well. And the reason I brought it up is, I have seen Swami over a period of 10 years make two boys act as Lava and Kusha and sing.
The glory of Rama.
Rama.
Rama
you know, Lava Kusha go to Rama's court and talk about Rama without knowing that the king was their father. And Rama sort of has a replay of his whole life and then he realizes who they are and so on and so forth. And in later years, he used to dress two fellows, personally dress them. And this went on many times. And when they sang, that was actually composed by, I don't know, probably Ghantasala, I'm not sure. And he would break into tears when Sita is banished and all that. So I said, why don't we do something now and give a nice bouquet to Swami? So essentially, we, instead of Lava and Kusha, we brought together Swami's students, those who used to sing the songs.
Yeah.
And then we got five songs, not exactly five, there may be six or seven, a bouquet of songs, which dealt with various aspects of Swami. And we chose them partly in such a way that we had the visuals. So, as the singing was going on, the visuals were playing. So Swami could see himself replay of his whole life, quote unquote, as the songs were going on. And in other words, we were harnessing technology. By Swami's grace, actually there was a bit of doubt about this program. And when it was aired as a trial balloon before Swami, he said, do it.
Mm.
He straight away blessed it, and so all the naysayers were brushed aside. And then he operated from the background in his own way and made a lot of people come together so that there was the songs, there were the visuals, there was the man who set it to music, and so many top artists came and played the musical background. And sound was recorded on 50 tracks and so on and so forth.
It was so grand.
And it came out very beautifully.
Very grand,
so
yes.
It was a grand culmination. And about 10 days later, in early December, Swami called all those boys. And he had got them special dresses.
Mm.
He said, you wear those dresses and come. And they came. It was just a normal darshan day, but he called them one by one and he gave them all a silver plate and had a photograph taken with him. So
he really obviously liked it so much.
Yeah, he enjoyed it. That day, I was on the stage. I was allowed to go on the stage. And I was watching him. He was physically...
Very frail.
But on that day, he was so lively. He liked it. And he didn't forget it. He called all of them and gave them a sanmanam. So I liked it. So he said, now that the physical form is not there, let us take it one step further. And obviously, Tyagaraja's tradition automatically came to our minds. And a group of people got together and thus was born the Pancharatna, what I would call seed. Now, the seed has been planted this year, which marks a turning point. In the sense, we have crossed 5 years and there is no stop point in anymore looking back and mourning and groaning, but going ahead with the determination to do what he used to do. Our lives have to become his message. And so let us mark it with that tradition. The seed has been planted. We have to see how it grows.
Okay,
now, if you want to know more about it, you need one more session.
And I think that is when we have to invite Brother C.G. Sai Prakash as well, so that the two of you can bring us up to speed about how everything evolved and where it is today. So I thank you very much for your time and your wisdom, sir.
Thank you very much. It is nice to discuss music. It is nice to discuss music with Bhakti. And it's even nicer to discuss it in the context of Tyagaraja and Swami. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam, you just heard to the second part of a special conversation on the splendor of the Sai Pancharatna Kritis. This was a dialogue conducted by Radio Sai's Karuna Munchi with Professor Jeevankatraman, and it was recorded on May 2016. And dear listeners, we look forward to your feedback, suggestions and comments on this conversation. Please, as always, mail us to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you, and loving Sairam from Prashant Nilayam.